This is the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we have conversations with everyday martial artists about their histories and how martial arts influence their daily lives. You are listening to the abbreviated version of this podcast, which is the first 20 minutes or so of the show. Please consider supporting the show by subscribing on our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/MALMAG. And for about the price of one coffee shop coffee per month, you can get access to 4 new podcasts each month, 1 week before their YouTube release dates. You also have access to all of our existing shows, which at this point is about 100 hours of shows for you to enjoy. Individual shows can be purchased at our Gumroad page. That is malmag.gumroad.com. This week I get on Zoom and I talk with fellow Southern California martial artist Janelle Barlongo. We talk about how she got into martial arts, in particularly CELOT and FMA, and how she got into teaching them. She's got a very interesting story. Sit back and enjoy. Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast. Today I'm connecting with another Southern California martial artist, a Valley girl, from what I understand. This is probably one of the more magnificent, as far as form, CELOT people I've seen in a long time. And I've actually not seen her in person, just seen plenty of videos and chatted with her quite a few times. So this is actually my first time to actually get to sit and talk with her. And I'm looking forward to actually kind of getting together with her in person at some point. But this is Janelle Barlongo. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited.
You're welcome. I'm very excited too. It'd be kind of fun to get to know a little bit more about you than the kind of like cool ass kicking things I get to see online.
Well, you shoot, and I'll answer.
Very cool. Okay. Well, let's kind of start like every superhero origin story. Let's start from the beginning. How'd you get involved in martial art?
Man. So when I went to college, there was So let's back all the way up. So growing up in pretty much the Valley, there weren't a lot of Filipinos. And so went through this whole transition of going to school and trying to figure out, well, what am I? Am I Asian? Am I Filipino? I have no clue what that meant. And so it wasn't until like I got to high school when I saw more Filipinos and more Asian, people. And I'm like, hey, what ethnicity are you? And so it kind of put me on this path of trying to figure out who I was in terms of my identity with the culture. And if that was something that I actually identified with, because up until that point, you know, it was pretty much like, hey, I'm American. That's all I know. And
right.
So I went to CSUN and, a buddy of mine was like, hey, there's a Filipino American Student Association. Why don't you come check it out? I was like, oh, cool. More people who look like me. And so I went to my first meeting and like, it was one of the most eye-opening things that I think I attest to where my martial arts started is because as I got to, you know a lot of the people in the club, one of the things they said was, hey, you know, why don't you try and run for like a board position? Which to me, I'm like, okay, I don't quite know what that means, but sure.
Responsibility. So, that's what that means.
Yeah, right. I was like, I just came to college. I just wanted to go to class and party and then go home. That was it. So,
sounds like college. It's normal college.
Right. Yeah. I didn't want responsibilities. And so I got the board position and I can't remember. I think I served as a maybe alumni chair. It was so far back. I can't remember. But one of the things that came up was my first year there, I learned about Filipino American History Month in October. And I always tell this story because it's one of the things that got me on the path of martial arts was, you know, they said, hey, did you know we have a martial arts? And I was like, no, what does that look like? And they're like, well, why don't you go research it? And you'll find this story pretty funny. I just told Paul McCarthy this story recently and he was like, I can't believe you did that. And so in my research, I obviously go on, you know, whatever the browser was at that time. It was like Internet Explorer. Sheesh.
Oh boy. Yeah, don't be saying that. That's where that starts to date you, right?
Yeah. I know, right?
What was the browser you used when you were yeah, okay.
I know, right? Yeah, whatever. Whatever. And so, you know, I start to research like what is Filipino martial arts? And of course, Dan Inosanto is like the man, right? And so I called the academy and I was like, "Hi, can I speak to Mr. Inosanto?"
Yeah, good. Okay. I love this. I love it.
Like, I don't know who answered the phone, but they were very nice. They're like, what is this in regards to?" And I said, "Well, I'm a student at Cal State Northridge, and I was wondering if you'd like to come do like a workshop for us." And you know, the person on the phone was like, "Let me get back to you." And I said, "Okay, cool. Well, here's the people that you can talk to afterwards," because I was just making the first contact. And right. So I gave them, you know, the phone numbers. And lo and behold, he actually was very gracious and said, "Yeah, I'll come do a workshop for you."
Wow. I love how genuine the whole inquiry is. And but it does show him, you know, he's like, they told him and he went, "Oh yeah, what a great idea. I need to do that."
Yeah, like in hindsight, I mean, I told that story near and dear to my heart, because that is the type of you know, person that I want to be, is be gracious with art, because it was, you know, it needs to be shared. And he was so gracious with his time. I mean, I think we only had about an hour, technically an hour and a half, to give him the floor, but he ended up staying for almost 3 hours and just like essentially immersing everybody into the culture. You know, he brought I'm sure he brought Joel at the time, but he brought like four of his top instructors and just gave us a whole seminar.
Yeah, this just does not sound unusual for the man I know. At all. Right? That's exactly normal. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did something like that this last summer, actually. It was a, I don't know if it was a college or a Filipino community group, something up in Sacramento. And he's just like, "Yeah, I'll go do it."
Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool.
Very cool. So that's where it all started. From there, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to find a school to train at. So I found school and then took a break and then dove deep into Kali and Silat with Tuhan Apollo and with Alvin Ginanow.
Wow, very cool. So now this is really interesting what you're telling me about. So it kind of reminds me of something. You know, growing up, I grew up in, I was born here, but I grew up in Illinois. So in the, I was born in 1969. So basically I was in high school in the 1980s. And I remember, you know, we had Asian kids in school. We actually had quite a bit of immigration from post-Vietnamese war. So we had a lot of people in Cambodia, Vietnam, coming into the area because it was kind of a good area for, the tractor industry, actually. Tractor construction was a big thing. There was John Deere, IH, Alice Chalmers. There's quite a few of these companies. Caterpillar and all that was making all this equipment. So it was quite a popular area, like basically the Detroit of, like, for tractors was where I grew up. It attracted a lot of people to come work there for good money and good jobs and that kind of thing. And I remember, you know, we had obviously Chinese restaurants, we had a Japanese restaurant. So, you know, we had a little bit of flavor as far as, you know, Asian variety. And I do remember a girl in school, and I didn't know anything about a Filipino other than I just knew the name. I knew what the Philippines were because I was good at geography. Historically, I had an idea, not a lot of in-depth knowledge, but just some basic thing. But I couldn't tell you whether I'd met a Filipino or not at that point. And I do remember a girl in school who was Asian and had a Hispanic last name and always thought that's different and never put that together, right? Until now, so many years later, going, "Oh man, I'll bet you she was Filipino. Okay, that makes sense." Right. But now that I've met plenty, everyone that I know, there's a very strong sense of identity, whether they're actually from the islands or their family. So do you have a small family, or they just were kind of disconnected from that? Because it just seems like to me, like there would have been this, hey, you're a Filipino and here's all these things we do.
Yeah, so it was interesting growing up. So my immediate family is actually very small. My parents immigrated here in the 70s, and my grandparents came over in the 80s. And my dad is, you know, one of my heroes who I will always look up to. When I was growing up, one of the things that a lot of the Filipino communities do when they're over here is they have, it's almost like at Cal State Northridge where they have the Filipino American Association, right? Except they have clubs from similar families from their town. So my dad and my parents were very much involved in an association called the Tayog Association. And it was a lot of my aunts and uncles who had immigrated from the Philippines to the United States. And it gave them a sense of community when they had to leave behind, you know, their families in the Philippines. So It wasn't to say I didn't know what being Filipino was growing up. It's just that it was so disconnected because I'm first generation here and my sisters grew up in the Philippines and immigrated here. It was very much this thing where assimilate as quick as you can. Look right. American, speak English perfectly. And so even though, you know, they got together in their group of friends, it was still very disjointed for me because it was more for them. It wasn't for the kids. So even though I go hang out, I'd see my cousins, you know, they would try and introduce us to some of the cultural dancing like tinikling or maglilitik, but it didn't resonate with me when I was a kid until I got older.
Wow. Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, immigrant stories are always fascinating. And even where I grew up with the different variety, it's like there was a lot of Hispanic immigration as well. And a lot of the kids that were my age, which were probably maybe second generation or first generation, yeah, they didn't speak Spanish either. It's like, I think it was a similar story. The idea was, okay, let's make you as American, quote unquote, as possible. Which funny these days that would hope would mean more variety, you know, and yeah. Speaking several languages, but at that time, no. And so, you know, I remember the funniest story of this guy I went to high school. It's one of my best friends still. It doesn't speak a lick of Spanish, but he's a Mexican guy. And I remember he came out here with me for a while and we were after high school and we were working and this apartment manager wanted him to talk to the lawn guys because you know, she wanted them to move a big plant or something. And she comes over to him. She says, Frankie, can you go do your thing and talk to those guys over there and have them move a plant? And he goes, what do you mean? Do my thing. She said, you know, talk Mexican is how she phrased it.
Oh, man.
I'm just looking at him like, I know you don't speak Spanish. How's this going to work out? This will be hilarious. So he goes walking right over there. It was great. And I'm like, following him. Going, okay. Cannot wait to see how this plays out. And he walks up and he's like, oh, you know, señor, ¿cómo está? And I'm like, okay, great. I know that much myself. Like, okay, come on, impress me here. How's this going to play? And he goes, hey, can you move that plant from here to here? You know, in English. And the guy goes, sure. He goes, great, thanks. And he turns to her and he said, Janice, just because they're Mexican doesn't mean speak English. It was so good. It was a good lesson for everybody involved.
Oh, my, that's really funny. Oh my god.
We laugh about that to this day. That was like probably 30 years ago or so, and every time we get together with him we put down a beer and laugh about that story.
has he picked up Spanish at all?
Yeah, I think he has a little bit because I know his sons have been studying it a bit as well. So, you know, I think Fortunately there's a desire for that, but I don't know how much at all, but you know, he speaks food very well.
That's so funny. Yeah, I mean, I can understand two different dialects, so I can't speak it. Like my parents spoke Ilocano and Tagalog growing up, so I can listen to conversations fully, but I can't regurgitate it.
Yeah, I got that with all my travels. I'm somewhat pidgin in about three languages. I couldn't carry on a conversation in anything other than English. Yeah. But at the gist of conversations here and there, but you know, fortunately, I think I know how to properly ask for the bathroom in a few languages. So, the important stuff, but
that's,
you know,
right.
It is a goal to go, okay, I'd like to get somewhat conversation in one of these. The problem is I have a hard time picking, you know, so I guess just keep working on whatever.
Whatever that is, just keep working.
Yeah, keep working on it. I mean, you know, funny thing, you know, with that sort of stuff. I lived in Central Asia for a couple of years and taught. So this is a country called Kazakhstan, where they do have a local or a Kazakh language, but most of them, if they were metropolitan, spoke Russian instead, because it's part of the former Soviet Union. And so I was learning both. The Kazakh language was really interesting because they put me in a class where the teacher only spoke, I think, Russian, Kazakh, and French.
Oh, man.
And the whole lessons were in the Cyrillic alphabet. I'm like, oh, wow, God, I only know about half of that. And I was in it maybe once a week. And somehow I got out of this class with being able to kind of stay, you know, in Kazakh. My name is Tim. I live in Almaty. I'm a teacher. And, you know, I knew how to say a few sentences, which was pretty good considering, like, the woman, you know, she couldn't speak English with me at all, which is really pretty interesting. And then Russian I picked up a bit. But so I remember getting a phone call over there, and I was living with a girl, actually. And I knew the phone call was for her. I pick it up, and she couldn't pick it up because she was cooking, so her hands were all messy. And so I pick up the phone, and I know how to say, you know, basic greetings in Russian, you know, and I know they're asking for her. And I said, okay, I need to tell them, hold on a minute. And my brain just went, uno momento, por favor. And that's what
your default.
Yeah, and I just walked over, and I'm laughing so hard. She's like, what are you laughing about? I said, well, I just told whoever this was to hold on a second in Spanish. She's like, why'd you do that? I said, I don't know, really, to be honest with you, but that's just what happened.
That's funny. That's your default. Hey.
Exactly. So maybe Spanish, I guess, since that might be one of the things I hear the most here, I suppose. That might be something I would see if I could get a little more fluent in faster. But, you know, I've got these two students at the academy that are teenagers that sort of adopted me. Now their mom's from Moscow, so they speak Russian, so I could probably get that a little faster if I, you know, have them at me a little bit. And then studied German in high school, and I know enough of that to get myself in deep trouble, you know, basically.
Only the pertinent words.
Right, exactly. Well, the funny thing is, you know, stuff like with Russian, I never cared to learn the curse words. I'm like, why would I want to curse at somebody here? I'd rather use my creative English than they wouldn't understand me, right? But, you know, you hear stuff all the time. You're like, damn, I know all these Russian curse words. Like, you know Spanish curse words, and you don't even try to get those either. But
that's true. That's true.
Too funny. Well, what was it? Was there anything about, you know, when you started getting involved in the culture studies, obviously the martial art was something that stood out to you, but was there other things that were new to you, like getting involved in these Filipino culture clubs and stuff that you went, whoa, that's really cool. I didn't know that.
It really just being immersed into the culture. So one of the other productions that gets put on every year by the Filipino Club is Filipino Culture Night. Mm-hmm. And obviously you get to learn the different, what they call suites, or different segmented dances that you get to perform in front of everybody. And that was so fascinating to me because it's one of those things where you're like, as a kid, I think I went to a few of the performances and I had no clue what was going on. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, different ethnic dances. Interesting. But when you have instructors who are also passionate about teaching the culture and the dance, which obviously should always go hand in hand, it was fascinating to me to learn what each of the dances actually meant and where it came from in terms of, you know, the influences of the Spanish culture, the influences of, you know, the different types of tribes from the Philippines, and how that affects the cultural movement of some of the dances. I thought that was so fascinating.
Yeah, you know, you're right there. And what's really crazy is how much, especially with the Spanish influence, then you're getting all this stuff from other places. You know, Guru Dan talked about the Carinosa dance as that, you know, they were using to hide different training with.
Yeah.
And my good friend, who was a, I met at the University of Miami when I went to school there, he's got an interesting background. So he's from here in LA originally, but his father is from Cuba and his mother is from Spain. And his father, the Cuban side of him, he's also part Basque. So it's, yeah, so that's, it's really fascinating. He's looking at me going, and his dad is saying, oh, Carañosa. He said, that's Cuban. He goes, it's a Cuban courtship dance. I said, what? I said, okay, that's interesting. So I'm like, I, you know, we were thinking it's Spanish. He's like, ah, I don't know, maybe. He said, but it's definitely Cuban.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. And it was, especially when I was visiting the Philippines, Bohol, you know, it's like I would see stuff and go, wow, okay, I know that from like Argentinian culture, and I know this from Mexican culture, and I know this from this culture. So it really is this kind of really interesting melting pot of like Spanish Empire stuff for sure.
It is, and it's cool to see, you know, so many different people and their expression of where their, you know, Cali Escrima Arnis has come from. Because when you watch them train, and you watch some of the drills that they do, you're like, wow, I can definitely see Spanish influence in that. I can definitely see the influence from Mindanao. I can definitely see the array of how some of those are constantly clashing with each other as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting. So that kind of leads me to the question of Silat. So, you know, you do that a mm-hmm. lot and you're kind of a sought after teacher in that. So Silat is definitely primarily a Southern Philippines, if I understand that right. So that's even in kind of like some of the Islamic areas and stuff. So what really drew you to Silat as a Filipino practice, a martial art?
Again, it's because of when I was at CSUN and I graduated, I was able to, you know, go to my first school, which is at Cass Magna School in Reseda. You know, I got pretty much the array of, you know, JKD, Kali, Muay Thai, and Silat. And so from those three or from those four different types of introduction to the arts, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, well, maybe this style doesn't really fit with that one, if you catch my drift. Because some styles are very rooted and some styles...
And this concludes the abbreviated version of the podcast. Please consider supporting the program by going to www.patreon.com/MALMAG and subscribing to the show. You can also purchase this individual episode or any individual episode at our Gumroad page. That's MALMAG.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Janelle Barlongo. Coming up next week, I connect on Zoom to South Carolina and I talk to another member of my fellow Skyscraper Tall Martial Artist Club, Harun Raja. Our Malmag online store at martialartslifestylemagazine.com has a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Krabiker Bong. Timmy B's brand now selling in Japan as well. Beautiful Timmy B's brand shirts and Dos Manos shirts are available, with new t-shirt designs and more products coming soon. An online course in the Dos Manos method for FMA is available under the Courses tab. More courses coming soon. Check out the Places to Train tab to find schools near you, and click on the Events Calendar page to see what seminars and events are happening all around the world. And of course, visit our main page for articles on the martial arts. Music by Jack L. Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.